just shortly, if you talk to the peers around, what do they glean from this particular piece, and they'll call us all together and move from there. Sort of like some of the stuff that you may have gotten in grad school. Good to know the name, maybe, because you probably haven't heard Vygotsky in a while, but that name may ring a bell. The goal of this is simply to talk about the structure of thinking when it comes to technology. So can I ask just a few people to volunteer? What did you glean, or what confused you, or what thoughts did you have as you were able to look at this particular text? And I'll build on that, when we move into the actual stuff. Okay, did your hand rifle up as I came in the periphery? Like, it just shot up. Go ahead.
He's very eager.
That wasn't trying to make fun of you. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
I thought it was interesting the idea that software that we use, and I never thought of this, was primarily designed for business and not for education, and how now we need to start thinking about software that's more education-based. Because I use PowerPoint all the time, but I never thought of it as being a business-based kind of thing. And so I want to see what's different now that our software is
about. Fantastic. What's your name?
Walt.
Thank you, Walt. My father works for an oil company in New York, and I remember being a college student when PowerPoint came out. And no one at the university had been using PowerPoint. It was the business community that sort of pushed that out to the schools to be able to use. I remember being a rock star the first time I used PowerPoint in class, and my dad had given it to me so I wouldn't be able to use. And no one had seen it. If you can imagine a world, prior to what an advanced PowerPoint was at that particular time, like, wow, you could have pictures on the screen in color. I mean, it was just a remarkable moment, but you're right. Explain Everything, which I think some of you had a chance to take a look at early in the week, Maurice Cook had no idea that educators would want to use this particular program when he made it. It went out there, educators, you'd say, this is great for education. Like, really? That was not the plan at all. He's been thrilled because it's been very helpful for his bottom line. But, I mean, it's not what he was intending at all. And there's a lot of technology that educators have been very savvy about saying, there's pedagogical value to this. And we'll talk about how you can realize that, see that, and allocate it for what you're doing. What else? There was a hand over here, I think. Go ahead, sir. What's your name?
I didn't get to share my group, so I want to have a chance.
Fair enough. Okay, so speak your truth.
Chatty too. I was, the biggest thing that I got out of here was, we've been doing this technology, and I've been learning technology and doing stuff in my class, but think of technology as not just technology. How do I get this here? How do I get them to do that? But to think of technology and how we use it as a way to help our students understand and also to address the different ways that they do understand or can understand, as well as trying to think of what might get in the way of them understanding, what's tough or perceived to be tough. So this whole idea. So it kind of changed my mind of like figuring out I have to go in school and set this up and do that. Wait a second. Let's talk about how this thing can be used to help make understanding clearer.
Okay.
Basic from what we do.
There's a fantastic series of points in those comments about the fact that you are the one who has to figure out how to appropriate this best for what you're going to do to reach the kids that you're sitting and working with. You know Marist kids. You know what their experiences are. You know their community. You know their background. And you know what's going to click with them and what won't. And as we maneuver through stuff and as you go through further trainings, your pedagogical content knowledge, which includes the wisdom of years working with this community, is important for trying to figure out whether or not the technology will work for the students that you teach over the course of time. Anything else? Left side of the room. Okay, my left, your right. We're still on the right. Go ahead.
This was Brian's. And I really agree with him that the pedagogical and the content knowledge is something that we get incrementally built on over years. I mean, it was very true in my case. And the technological knowledge is out there, and it's a huge step. The increment isn't there. It's like baby steps, and then we have to jump onto a mountain. And so having those three intersect right here is the challenge for me.
That's actually a very earnest place to be. I'm going to do two responses there. I mean, you're right. Number one is that you've been building your content knowledge for a very long time. That goes back to interest that you may have had as a child. Yeah, my interest in social studies, I was a history teacher, history department chair, my degree's in history. That goes back to third grade and being at Teddy Roosevelt's house at Sagamore Hill in New York, where I grew up, being there with grandma and grandpa, and it goes all the way back there and just builds in fifth grade and eighth grade and college. And then pedagogy, I mean, if you've been teaching for years, and some of you double or triple my 17 years in education, and you have all of this wisdom that has built up over the course of time, and that's, in many ways, a remarkable amount of ability. In fact, the Shulman piece, which I know is very brief in the beginning, if you ever have a chance to read an article about teaching, I mean, it's wonderful because he takes the Oscar Wilde quote, George Bernard Shaw quote, "Those who can do, those who can't teach." That's from Shaw, for those who never knew where that was from. And he attacks it and says, now wait a minute, like, you know, teaching has a very finite set of skills. Teaching is something that people have to learn over time, because if you just know content, you don't know the tricks. You don't know how to be able to change the analogy for the different kids in the room, or to tell the joke at the right time. Remember that that joke didn't work, so I won't tell that one again. That's here's the wisdom.
Yes, I will.
Is that?
Yes, I will.
Where are you?
Are you a domer?
More like
yeah.
Okay. No.
Oh, I'm sorry. No,
my roommate, as a Holy Cross volunteer, was a domer. Like, you know, and the old joke was, how do you know a Notre Dame graduate? They tell you in the first 3 seconds.
Oh,
we're gonna get along just fine today. Don't worry. I love domers. The part that I want to challenge in that statement, though, is that I think you have a lot more technological knowledge than you think. You may not have as much digital technological knowledge. Okay, I mean, you may not necessarily be understanding how to play with this and this, and I have a pair of glasses I can talk to at my office, and this device that I punch in numbers and it prints out this thing, like, you know, that looks like what I wanted it to print out. I mean, it's amazing that stuff exists today. That's digital technology. It's what's called opaque. We don't always understand how it works. Like, I talk to my glasses and they talk back to me, and that amazes me. But you do understand technology. And I hate to put it in very simple ways. I mean, there are things all around us that over the course of time people have created. The pens that you use, the whiteboards that you use, like, you know, those were all advances at one point in time. I had a chalkboard when I went to school. I didn't have a whiteboard. The whiteboard was a functional advance. It was a technological advance over the chalkboard because erasing was easier. I got colors in a way that chalk couldn't do. There wasn't the screeching that would happen when my math teacher would attempt to use that gigantic, like, is it a protractor or a common thing that they would try to use, or the human teacher would take the big line one and go across, or even graphing paper, and you put that on a smart, I mean, think of the advances that you've used. So I want to give you more credit than you may give yourself credit for, which is that you've been mastering technology. Now, the key is that combination of pedagogy and technology and content and technology. And I think part of the issue for many of us is, for me, is the ability to always get to that flow that you've had in a classroom from your great pedagogy over the course of time. You know PowerPoint. You know where it fails. You know where it succeeds. You know how to run it. You know how to use those math programs and the software that's been around for a while. And I'll be honest with you, because I believe that this is accurate, there's a lot of newer stuff that's coming through that may challenge the flow of the Wi-Fi. Like, yeah, I mean, you know how a classroom runs. Like, yeah, I mean, if you can give kids more than that 45-second gap, like, yeah, I mean, and you don't move on, like, you know, you may lose their attention. And the technology that we're learning, because of the fact that it's newish, can challenge that flow. And I can admit that from going around from school to school, it's the number one concern of lots of teachers is, how will I be able to put this in my pedagogy? And I also recognize, too, I have three kids, 16, 12, and 5. I guess which one was planned. But I know what it's like to have a very busy life. Some of you coach, if not all of you coach, you know, you do drama, you do retreats, you have lives, and it's very difficult to sit and to be able to pick up all of this particular knowledge sometimes in the time frames that it may seem as if you're being asked to pick them up. Okay, the recommendation though for you, and this is upside down, the reason that I give this to you is to look at this particular chart here and don't think of it as existing like this at every single moment of the flow. You have your content, you have your pedagogy. Technology, in my mind, and again, I'm an educational technology professor, comes last in that particular sequence. It's the last thing that you add, and you add it when it makes sense. Okay, you add it when this will help with the content and allow kids to access content in a way that they never had before. I'll show you this later. As a historian, I love using political cartoons. And I know that I can show them on that, okay? But if you're sitting there, and my political cartoon is up here, and there's little tiny writing up here, then you won't see that. And I know that in classroom, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have you come up to the screen every so often, but technology can assist with kids being able to access that content in a way that this technology could not. And so why wouldn't I contemplate using that? But also pedagogically, sometimes a kid can reach me more effectively, or I can reach them by utilizing that. You saw Explain Everything. Kids don't like to interrupt me. Adults don't like to interrupt me because I have pretty good flow. Okay, but sometimes they need to interrupt me because they don't get it. Okay, and they're not going to be rude because they're good kids. They're going to let it go. And then I get to that point in the class where I say, do you have any questions? Okay, and what do they typically do? They sort of just sit there and let it go. And then later on, they're doing their paper and they have no clue what would happen. And so you'll talk in your program, I believe, about this concept of flip pedagogy, which has good results if done properly. But the whole point was the idea that students probably would prefer a video version of you to the real you at times, because they can stop. They can make you repeat the same line of approaches in the room. Like, I mean, isn't it challenging sometimes when you're coaching baseball or a golf swing or a jump shot, like, you know, and the kid isn't getting it and they can't see it, like, you know, you're saying, why can't you get this? And it's frustrating. Whereas if they have some of the technological tools, they can see their swing versus the right swing and be able to correct a lot more effectively. So why wouldn't I use those pedagogical tools to be able to assist my students and my athletes and my drama kids and my even retreat leaders with being able to do just that? So I appreciate the comment that you're keying in here, because it's an important part of this conversation. TPAC is a layering process. You know your content. We respect you for knowing your content. You know the pedagogy because of the wisdom of years. And the technology may seem insurmountable, but I believe you've been doing it for a very long time. And the layering on top, okay, is something that with patience, okay, with the care for kids, okay, and with a little bit of practice, you'll be able to implement effectively. No matter where you are on your time scheme or where you are, humans are incredibly adaptable. They adapt throughout their entire life, even though they don't think they do. I mean, how many of us remember a phone that was actually on a hook? I mean, how many of us remember the typewriter with vivid memories? Like, you know, and we keep adjusting. Like, you know, I remember the world before PowerPoint. You know, and overhead projectors and chalkboards, and yet we've adapted again and again. And even if it seems initially disconcerting, I believe that all of us can pull that off. So, that said, before I move into some demos, other insights, questions, snide remarks. So you want to take me on? Like, I mean, feel free. I did a debate coach like 10 years. I mean, if you want to bring it, like, you know, I love it. But anything. Does that make sense? What's your name?
Yeah, Debbie.
Debbie, hi. Welcome. Thank you for coming to the session today. But, all right.
You're welcome.
So, I'd like to show you a couple of things to be able to demonstrate this. And so the way that I constructed this, I said to myself, what are some pedagogical issues that happen? Like, yeah, so essentially, what are some problems that go on in a classroom? And then how could technology be used in my sort of sequence to be able to assist in that particular process? Now, I have been told by the powers that be and we can chuckle about this to a certain degree, that the Wi-Fi may not be functioning properly right now, okay, which presents an intriguing complication for me as I attempt to demonstrate this stuff to you. But I have been through this a couple of times, and so I will do my best to be able to demonstrate this for you. So let's start with the first thing here, which is that I just want to do a basic demonstration of how technology can help us with accessing content, and also how it can help us in a pedagogical fashion. How many of you have heard of something called augmented reality? Okay, so I have, can you hold your hand up? Okay, there's a couple of you. So how does this work? What's your name?
Renee.
Renee, tell me about how this operates.
I don't know that I could tell you how it operates.
But you've heard of it.
I've heard of it.
Okay, so you want me to tag in your partner over here?
Tag.
Go ahead.
Well, when you said augmented, I related to virtual reality. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
You are in the right ballpark.
Okay. So, I'm going to talk about Oculus Rift. Is that going to...
You've gone too far.
Okay.
So, however,
way
it's not Google Glass either. It's actually much more simple than that. Gentlemen over here, you're the third person, so I mean, you're the last one in this chain.
I'm the last one in the chain. Enlarging, using the technology to bring other parts of the world around you.
This is pretty, actually, you're on the right track. I like this. I'm trying to tease this out of you. So the person in the back may have looked it up on Google. Okay, go ahead.
No. Well, you mentioned that you have Google Glass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's when you're using some sort of piece of technology to bring the experience of physical realities and integrate them into your experience through that technology.
Okay, I like that too. Okay, and I'm going to attempt to take that and convert it into a simple phrasing here. So you see here in front of me, this is a printout of a human body. So who are my health teachers in the building, or PE teachers in the building? Take a look at this. Okay, so this has a number of little factoids on it. Okay, right? So all things that I believe are accurate. I am not a health teacher, although my health students put me on some ridiculous no wheat, no anything challenge in the month of September. It was wonderful. Now, I have an app on here that's called Anatomy 4D. Now, you're my health teacher example, right? So you're going to help, you're going to hopefully ooh and ah if this works the right way. So hold that for 1 second. Now, I'm going to hold this over here. Tell me what's happening on the screen.
So I got a 3D skeleton showing all the internal organs, lymphatic system, bones, everything.
So now what's happening as I'm pushing buttons here?
It's changing you're adding in all the layers.
Okay, so let's go over to this. So you people saw that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so now then, let me come over here and show it again over here. So I'm going to ask you, so what's your name? John. You know, he claimed that something popped up on this page. Like, yeah, we're going to see if he's a liar. So we're going to come over here. I'm going to hold this up. What do you see on the screen? We will be together later this afternoon, and I can show you how this works. But a lot of people enjoy this. You see all these different systems here, and I can make him bigger or smaller, so I can look at close. So now, if this kicks back in, I'll show you all. But here's what the premise behind this is. Okay, so augmented reality. Okay, means that you take something that exists in our physical world and you augment it with something else. And so this particular program created by Daqri, not the drink, but D-A-Q-R-I, allows you to take a look at this body, like, you know, coming forward, and then the student is able to alter what's there. Daqri is great because not only does it have this for this body, they do the heart and the brain and all other portions of the body. And kids can sit there and manipulate it, take pictures of various pieces. You can ask them to focus on gender, focus on the respiratory system, and it makes it all appear in front of them. And then if one were so inclined, Daqri has made its 4D studio free so that if you were the creator type, you could have yourself, child, friend, student, create their own version of, say, the spleen or the leg, again, to be able to have that pop up on their own. Now, that by itself is a way to have content be accessed. Okay, and so there's a way for kids to see this more clearly than in my mind ever before. Your kids are going to have iPads next year, and so all they would have to do is have this particular app and then be able to scan. You can ask them questions, and then the human body would leap out at them in a way that most of our textbooks, I mean, when you looked at that, would you choose that, or would you choose the textbooks you've used before?
Oh, I'd go with that.
Yeah, okay. So, you
it's
sir?
Free. It's loading.
That's priced $3.99. Thank you. But you know, there is more to this that actually implies, if I can keep talking about it, there's another one that's called Word Lens. And so I'm going to show this one as well. So in Word Lens, and again, I have to double-check my network's on here. Let's go to this gentleman right here. Hi, how are you? Okay, so do you speak other languages?
Neither do I.
You know what? My wife wants to travel. My wife wants to go to Paris. Okay, I mean, that's been what I get every 15 years of marriage, and I'm going to have to go at some point in time, so I have to keep, that's why I'm here today,
you're
to keep raising money.
You have to go.
What's that?
You're a history teacher, you have to go.
Well, I'm actually an Asian historian, so I mean, I really don't feel that. I mean, in fact, in my experience, the French are bad. Calling out the Domers, the French, just making friends left and right here. Nevertheless, like, you know, when I look at this particular screen, okay, can you tell me what's happening on my screen? Yeah, it's a little bit streaky because it's on the phone. But what's it doing?
It's changing all the words to a foreign language.
That's right. Like, you know, and so this program called Word Lens, like, you know, will actually let you change the words on a piece of paper into a different language. They have German and Spanish, and they're bringing Japanese. There's Portuguese. It will actually work on my glasses too. So when I'm in Paris, I'll be able to look at a sign and be able to translate it from French to English and not have to get into a conversation with someone who doesn't like Americans. So you know, like, you know, since it came online, it has been improved bit by bit. Like, you know, and granted, if I'm a language teacher, the value here is actually not necessarily in the technology. It does a good job of translating spot pieces, like, you know, but conjugation is still a bit of a trick. And so if I want to combine my content and my pedagogy, I have the kid look at something, they get the translation, so the content becomes accessible, but then the pedagogical skill is it right? Like, you know, so when we use this sign that I've made and you're scanning it, is this correct? Do they do it the right way? Like, you know, and then we'll see, because if I've actually made that sign to be flipped, I'll know what the mistake would have been, and then my kids have a more real-life chance to test. I mean, I could actually have a gallery in my room of all different signs they would have on a street corner in Barcelona and have them have to look and be able to see what the right place to go. I could give them tasks. That's the pedagogical, technological content knowledge coming together at this particular moment to facilitate a learning experience that previously wasn't something that we were able to make happen as effectively. And then there's still more. So for those of you who don't teach in anatomy, those of you who don't teach in foreign language, you may say, well, how can I use this particular technology in other ways? My friend Michael is a theology professor, and so he and I had combined on this one. This is a reading about Charlemagne. Okay, here's the skinny about this particular reading about Charlemagne. Constantine. Bad. I don't teach theology. But nevertheless, in this particular reading, his students would always have a problem with a particular tract, and they would come into class always confused. And so what we said was, what if we could augment this particular page of the reading? Okay, and then tell your students that if they got stuck on this particular page, particularly the highlighted segment that's on this page, that they could scan the page and get additional information. Okay, wouldn't that be useful? Because instead of the kid giving up at home and saying, screw it, you know, I can't read this, like, you know, they would actually have a chance to be prompted to keep going. And if they didn't need the prompting, kudos for them. But if they needed the help, then they had it available. And so what he crafted is in another app called Erasma, okay, A-U-R-A-S-M-A, and I'll show that to every department later on today. He was able to load, and I'm going to go over here. Okay, so you can get bigger and pull this. Okay. So you'll see that there's the article.
us.
Okay, if I scan here, so what happens?
A video show.
So, what he was able to do, again, I'll do it on this side of the room. Can I have you hold this for me? Well, you're all participating so well today. Thank you so much. But if I scan right there, you see that? Like, you know, we got comical here. We actually dressed up the professor in a Roman outfit, you know, and so we had fun with this one. But, I mean, we've had it where a professor simply just shows up as a regular video and, like, a little head pops up and says, hey, let's, like, you know, chat about this particular past. You want to see it?
No, I've actually experienced it because Jostens, the yearbook company, has adopted that into their program and taught it to advisors to put in their yearbooks.
You can see videos of their homecoming dance, not just their picture of the
homecoming dance. You have a number of different pedagogical applications. My students right now, my history education students, are augmenting the entire EK Legacy Foundation. And so all of the artifacts that are at this particular museum will have a video attached to them, and so when kids walk through, they can scan it, and they'll be able to see all of those different particular pieces. I've seen people who have done their version of the Daily Prophet. Yeah, if you know that reference from Harry Potter, the newspaper that comes to life. Like, you know, there's actually an app called Layar, L-A-Y-A-R, that has linked up with Toronto Star. And so every day there's another augmented thing, and the best one so far was Proposal. And so it was a picture of an engagement ring. And so it was on Valentine's Day, and it said, please scan this and see if you've been proposed to. And it was this guy's wedding proposal. It was right there on the page. And so what an opportunity for some of your journalism students, or even just the student product. I've seen it at the Oregon History Day competition where kids just sort of get one more extra leg up on their opponents. And this could happen in the science fair. Instead of just having the trifold sort of be there, they augment all the images of the experiment so you can see all the different parts of it as it was happening or as it was being done in the field. Like, here's me doing a sample, like, you know, and here's me doing this, so that way the person can put all of those pieces together. Say hello for all.
I thought you were doing that on purpose.
It's not my phone.
Go ahead.
So like on the one with the help,
yes.
Do you have to have the picture that corresponds with the app, or can you use it on any picture, and then it creates that?
Anatomy 4D, that particular app, asks you, I mean, when you get the app, it gives you the chance to print that particular form. However, you, in any augmented reality program, or most of them anyway, you have the ability to create what you want to be able to use. So, and again, I can demonstrate this to you later. We could augment... everyone probably right now could augment the sheet right in front of them if the app were on all of your devices. I'm not going to, because the wireless is down, I can't have you load it.
We're back online.
Oh, we're back online.
I'm just not getting you connected.
If you're intrigued by that particular example, okay, and it's something that you'd like to try, I'm going to be meeting with all departments this afternoon, we can take 10 minutes, like, you know, and I can show you how to be able to do that. As a history teacher, I'll admit, my intro to it was with the textbook. And the thought of, like, being home, reading my old... I'm sort of a geek, and I love history textbooks, but, I mean, most of my friends told me that I was a geek, and so I was unusual. But history textbooks and my students were always a challenge, because they would not want to read the textbooks, and even the readings that I would give them besides the textbooks. And so for me, what if I augmented the map? Okay, what if I augmented the picture of Napoleon? Okay, I'd be able to stand there and shake his fist at me. I mean, what if I was to be able to augment some of the math problems that kids see and often have problems with? Actually, it's the math teacher that I'm teaching right now who have the most use for it because they know what problems trip kids up all the time. And so they'll say, like, you know, I mean, if you get stuck on number 15, okay, then there's a video attached, you would email me, I'll tell you how to do it. Okay, so that way the kid tries, has to email the teacher if they're stuck, and then if they're stuck, the teacher helps them by showing them, here's the example of how you can complete this particular problem. Okay, and so for me, this particular type of technology is a process by which, I mean, ultimately, the very first time that I saw it, I was actually with a friend of mine who's a chemist, and I showed him, and he's like, so what? Yeah, I mean, you're making a, you know, picture start to talk, big deal. I'm like, you have to understand the pedagogical application even for your chemistry lab. Okay, how many times do you review safety procedures? Again and again. Okay, what if kids simply had to scan that beaker? And there was a video of you explaining how this is supposed to be used. And he paused, like, that would save me hours. You know, that would save me so much time that kids would be able to get it. You know, what if it was in gym? You know what I mean? And you're trying to go over how to do a particular procedure. Here's the proper way to do a push-up. It's not hard, but people don't do it right again and again. Like, you know, to be able to give them those tools, to be able to make it work, that to me is this great moment where Erasmo wasn't made for schools, but people have appropriated it to be able to use effectively with the classroom environment. Erasmo has even made their studio free for educators because initially it was for Coke and for Nike. And all of a sudden these teachers started using it and they were floored that they thought that there was going to be educational applications to it. So that's it. That's first example. Okay, I mean, I want to talk about two or three hard-ups, okay? You know, I know that I began late and I'm trying to hold for the tech. Like, I know this is actually something that, by the way, is not uncommon, like, you know, as schools begin to use. So you need to thank your IT folks as much as you possibly can, because having worked with IT, this is a... Sorry, BMOC, okay. So you had a chance the other day to learn about Google Docs and Drive, right? Can you fill me in on what you gleaned from that conversation? Because I don't want to spend too much time, but I want to know what you know or what you remember from that conversation.
We can store stuff.
You can store stuff.
Yes.
Now let's talk about, I mean, Google Drive. I mean, I can store stuff on this thing here. Like, you know, how is Google Drive different?
You should access it from various ways.
Where is my stuff?
In the
ether.
Lovely?
Like, you know, it's just do you remember hard drives? Do you remember the time there was a hard drive that used to be on that tower that's a coffee holder? Like, you know, I mean, way back in the day, like, you know, but I mean, so you've taken your stuff, you've thrown it up in the air, like, you know, and now it exists in the cloud. Why is that a remarkable functional advance for us all?
So when your laptop falls off your cart as you're rolling to one of the classrooms you teach in and you kill it, you don't lose all your stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Or if you're going to the other class.
See, I think that the very first place that we access something like Google Docs and Google Drive, now first off, it was maligned a few years ago because it wasn't Microsoft Word. Now, this may be blasphemy to my father, but I think Google Docs has surpassed Microsoft. I sort of compare Microsoft to the Roman Empire, like the West Roman Empire. Like, yeah, Google's a barbarian, like an opposite to the Roman Empire for a while. Google keeps attacking. And Microsoft does not respond quickly enough. I mean, they do this Office 365, but you got to pay for it. It's like, wait a minute, Google Docs is free. You know, so why am I paying for your, at this point in my mind, somewhat outdated program? Now, I love PowerPoint. I type my lesson plan in Microsoft Word, but I find it harder and harder to do so for a couple of reasons. Number one is that, A, Google's now going to give every student unlimited storage.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember back to when I had a hard disk. Do you remember these? Or floppy disks?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, when I was in college, a hard disk had 1.44 megabytes worth of space. That was amazing. And I used to have my geeky little box where I had like 30 of them. Like, if I had a PowerPoint, it would take 5 disks to be able to do it. Like, you know, and now, and then they came out with little flash drives, and my first flash drive had a whopping 8 megabytes. I paid $80 for that particular stick. And now Google is telling me that I can have all of the storage that I want. Okay, where I can essentially put anything and everything. That's an amazing functional advance. But then on top of that, I can access it anywhere. So if I have my laptop, great, I can use it there. If I have my iPad, which I just have the case right now, fantastic. If I have my phone, for lesson plans, that means I can pull a lesson, and I've done this before, I can go on my phone, access my drive, and get a lesson plan from 2002, and begin teaching that PowerPoint now. Okay, I am somewhat floored by the ability of all of my stuff to be like that. Essentially, if I have this device alone, if I have that device and that device alone, then I am an operative, functional person, whereas years ago, I have to have those disks. I have to wait for them to load. But there's even more with Google Drive because it's collaborative. Okay, and that's the part that ultimately, pedagogically, is the biggest advance that everyone should make use of. Because there's a couple of elements here that we can play with. If this gentleman makes a document, he can share it with his whole department. Okay, and before it was I have to email it to everybody, but in this case he shares it, we all get it, and then we can all look at it in real time. We don't have to go and fight for a space in the back. We can all sit at our desk and work on it at the same time. Students in a classroom, you can put them in groups to work on something and they don't have to sit together. Okay, you can have them spread across the room working in the same document. If they share it with you, you can see what they're typing. Okay, so you get to look in on their work. You get this godlike power that people don't use. And that to me, that Microsoft Word doesn't do that. Google Drive does. Go ahead.
Well, I also like that we can comment on it, and then they can be at home and see the comment and fix things before I need to take all the Microsoft Word stuff.
My time is already very tight in class for all of the content I have to teach and all the other issues I have to deal with. And so if I can simply pass that back and forth and I'm done with grading, goes back and they see it right away, they can ask questions because they've seen the comment I put in the active little comments is resolved. In all of those possibilities, even for them to make a presentation, they can collaborate together on Google Slides. Okay? They can work together on a chart in spreadsheets. They can draw together in art, and there's multiple other apps you can fuse to Google Drive to be able to make it work, including video, including mind maps. Things that previously you'd have to go and track down in multiple locations, they're all in one particular depot. And I don't know, again, I like Microsoft, but I don't know how it compares at the moment because of the collaborative and cross-disciplinary nature of much of the work that's being done with Google right now, and you have that available to you. I also, just so you know, I do have Schoology. That's the LMS that you've chosen, and that's perfect to be able to use for many of these same functions. I tend to use Google Drive to give my students all of their material, I can't show you just yet, but I will. In my classes, when my students do have iPads, and if they don't have iPads, they have phones. I don't hand paper out anymore, like I did this morning. I just simply say, okay, we can material day 2, file 3. Okay, and then in 10 seconds, everyone has it. Okay, and so to go from what I previously, take out your notebook, please, take out this, like, even sharing notebook paper. I mean, we talk about note taking, and I'll segue into that. If kids just up to their mic, out what pedagogy works for you and what would help advance, what's the diet.
think I said this about 13 times or 14 times, it's not expected that everybody will use this every day. It's expected that you will be professionals and say, I wonder how I could help my kids learn more and hang on to things like integrity because I'm scared of where they're going with it and what they can achieve with, and how do I assess with it because if a group puts it together, does Johnny really get a grade or did Sally really do his work, and then, so, I don't know how to say it any more clear except to say good teachers will use it where they need to use it, and others, I mean, Nuxall stood on a desk the other day to get across the point about something, and that kid was, those kids were involved, and there was not much technology, heavy-duty desk. And so at that point, you go, what is the best way to teach? I don't know how to say it any plainer. Slow it down in your heart. Use it where you need to use it. Okay?
And TPAC is supposed to be able to, and the reason I throw that at you as well is maybe as a rounding out point here. There's a point with technological pedagogy, not technology, that when technology is not going to help you, you don't use it. I run into a lot of people who I believe are digitally adventurous, and they believe that every piece of technology is good, and so they want to use technology in every class all the time. Kids burn out on that. You know what I mean? And so whatever I tell people, if they're adapting technology, find the moments in your class that have not been working. Okay? And let's all be honest here for a second. We have our great lessons. Okay, we have our stand on the deck. I'm curious to know more about this moment. But you know, I love role-playing. Okay, I had a wardrobe in my classroom of costumes. You know, I love that. I would never, ever, ever replace that with technology. There are things in fieldwork, scientists, that cannot be replicated on a device. Okay, there is the feel of hitting a baseball, you know, and cracking it into left field that cannot be ever replaced by doing it.
Yeah, and this is actually a more universal network thing than a network thing here. And I'm not sure, what's your IT gentleman's name?
Chris.
Give Chris a round of applause. Okay. They are unsung heroes, but I have a lot of cords.
Fantastic.
So here's what I'd like you to try to contemplate doing if you could. Here, by the way, is my demo folder. Like, you know, at the bottom, you're going to see the bottom middle. Yeah, so this would be like Rich Little on Hollywood Squares. But if you see there's an app there and it says Nearpod, okay, if you could go to the App Store, okay, we're going to use it later, but I'd rather have you try to start loading it now, you know, in order to maintain my flow. And it may take a few moments to load, but N-E-A-R-P-O-D, if you could load Nearpod, that would be fantastic. Okay, and we'll come back to that before we wrap up this this hour session right here. Okay, so if that's loading, okay. If it gives you a can't connect to the App Store, usually that's just a blip. Okay, close it. Try again. Like, you know, I mean, I'm not going to task you with creating anything in these next few minutes. So, I mean, you have a chance to just try it again. I get that. Like, you know, I have an iPad cart. Like, you know, and one of the 20 will always say, like, sorry, can't load. Like, you know, and it's just, it's invariable. Like, you know, you get used to those types of Murphy's Laws, or what my friend calls the O'Brien corollary to the Murphy's Law, which is that Murphy was an optimist. Okay, there's an app called Nearpod. N-E-A-R-P-O-D. And I'll demonstrate why I want to use that a little bit later. Okay, so the other app that I wanted to talk about that was one of your core apps, and just to sort of round out this conversation on TPAC before I go to the other colorful images on the packet, is this app that you have called Notability. And there's a reason that I want to be able to reflect on Notability from a TPAC perspective. I assume that everyone in this class asked their students to take notes, okay? And you probably have modes for being able to do that. However, like you probably run into different types of challenges when you have kids take notes. Can anyone help me by telling me some challenges that pop up as kids take notes? So what types of things happen?
Some of them write very slowly, or some of them just don't pay attention until you change the slide and then go.
Right, so you have it up here on the screen. Okay, there's actually probably two kids that are existing in the classroom. There's the kid who is writing down every single word furiously, like they're burning, the smoke is coming from the paper because of how fast they're going. They insist, and then if you try to change the slide, they'll say no. They won't even look up. They're just I'm still writing. And then the kid who, even though you have the best writing, the best definition of all time, is just sort of glaring at it, as if there's something mystical there, but they don't understand quite what yet. Other note-taking issues?
I think that what's on the slide is the only thing important that I haven't said.
Right.
So they write down only what's there.
Right. You cease to exist in this process because this is shiny. And you tend to exist somewhere over there in the continuum. Go ahead.
They take notes in random places. The stack of notebooks, which I and I'll see really great religion notes, and I'll see a homework that never got turned in for history.
So their organizational skills and how they take notes sometimes defies the logic of this world. A couple of things here. There's also, I teach rhetoric to freshmen, so I teach in our honors program, and so I've been doing speech teaching now for a very long time. I'm not sure if you have a speech and debate coach or a speech teacher here, or if you all have a chance to teach speech. I learned a couple of things along the way. Number one, the average student can handwrite about 30 words a minute. Okay, that's about the best that a human can do, is about 30 words a minute intelligibly. You can write more, but then it becomes like Dr. Scribble, where you don't really know what that is. A good typist, can go about 70 to 80, although my mom can blaze 150 because she's been a secretary for years and it's just sort of amazing like that. But most of us, 70, 80, some students 50 if they haven't really had a lot of keyboarding. The average human can talk articulately 200 words a minute. Okay, and some of us could hit, those of us from New York, hit 400 on a good day. Do you notice a particular problem, with that particular, series of numbers there? If you're following, the note-taking process is a losing battle, from the very beginning, because the kid actually can't necessarily keep up with your pace. Now, here's another issue. Our minds from studies are able to move at a clip of 400 words a minute. Which means that the brain moves a lot faster than the mouth or the hands. And so there's a point where that also becomes problematic. You probably see this whenever you have a verbal pause. Do you ever say or like or so you know? And you don't know why you say that so often? Teachers actually are guilty of this more than any other profession. Because what's happening is that you're thinking of your lesson plan, and you're thinking three steps ahead, but your mind's moving too fast for your mouth. And so now for a student, this is intriguing because you're speaking half of their brain's pace. Their hand can only move a certain amount, and so this entire process is flawed. Now I say that not to say this is not an advertisement of don't take notes, and so you will never hear me say that ever, ever. I believe that notes are important, notes are critical, kids need to have them, but the process of taking notes pedagogically has to be improved. And we have to leverage technology to be able to help kids to do that because we know these are inherent flaws. This is no secret. If you want the research, I'll email it to you. Just ask. They've been doing this again and again. And all it says to me is that what we typically ask kids to do in a classroom is not going to be as helpful as we want it to be. And that's where a program like Notability comes in. Because if we take a look at it, and some of you have played with them. This is a $3 app, so you see here a bunch of notes from my class the other night. But on the surface, it looks like an organizer. When you open it up, that's where it appears. So for the person who wants to have her theology classes be a bit more organized, students get that right away on their device. I have it right away on my device, so I appreciate that. But let me actually begin the note-taking process. So here's my note for the day. Now, there's a couple of things I can do here. So if I click on the gear at the top, it gives me this paper button right here, and then I can change what the paper looks like. So if I was doing math, I could have that as the background right away and not have to really worry about having just a regular blank piece of paper. Kids get their grid lines or guidelines or writing lines. They could have it in pink. I don't know why they'd want it in pink, but they could. And then I can just go to basic paper if that's what I really want to do. So right away, for some teachers, that can be really useful because by graph paper, they can just submit everything like that to me, and we'll get to that later on. But there's more. Now, I realize that you may or may not be comfortable with this, but I like this, and I'll explain from personal experience. I took a graduate seminar from Dr. David Horowitz at Portland State University. It was on my favorite era of history, which is the Gilded Age and the Progressive Era, that time period, so you know even more about my geekiness. Dr. Horowitz doesn't believe in questions, meaning that there is no time. That would interrupt his flow, and so you can't ask questions. And if you do, he'll glare at you. There is no anything else besides him talking. He would pull up his lecture, and he would read for 3 straight hours. Okay, I'm good. Okay, I'm a very good student. But there is no way that I can sustain my attention for that particular time and hone in on him for that entire period. And as a teacher taking this class, I recognize that if I can't hold up for that particular time, then many of my students who are not like me and love auditory learning could do that. So here's what this offers, and I like it here because it allows for this to be recorded. Now, some of you know that already, so no big secret. Well, what I really like about this is that if a student were typing their notes, so I'll put that here, typing their notes, okay, and then I hit stop, if I click on this little arrow here, the recording pops up. And so if you watch the recording, okay, as it gets to a certain point, you see what happened right there. Okay, so it actually matches the recording to the typing or the notes. Now, where this is important in the process is that if I were home from my graduate seminar and I looked at my notes, and because I'm going to be behind Dr. Horowitz because I can't write or type as fast as he can talk, then I can look at him and say, wow, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, what I wrote there doesn't have any connections or context or background. So what was being said at that particular moment? And then I can go back and look precisely at what I wrote at that particular moment and hear what was being said at that particular moment, and I'm able to then know what actually was being written was right for what was being said, or it was way off, and I was missing that particular moment. That particular feature, I know, scares a lot of teachers because we're not used to being recorded, but we have a lot of kids who don't process auditory really well, and this particular tool would assist them in that particular process. Plus, in some ways, it's a hedge. Because if you did say it, and you have multiple recordings of it, then you could say, go to the 35th minute, Jim. Play that back for me. Did I say it? Oh, yes, I did. And you missed it.
That's why it's on the test.
So there is a background to this, which I know sounds a bit like Inspector Javert trying to track down Valjean, okay, but I find it really useful for my pedagogy when kids are able to show me. I mean, because I know that in my 17 years, sometimes I believe that I did it. And I don't know, I'm human. I've had moments where I thought I said it because I did it the last 16 years, and I actually didn't. Like, you know, and so it blended. And my kids didn't get that. Then they had a test question, and it was unfair. And so there's a point where, not that I want to like sort of highlight my mistakes, but I think it's also important to be able to offer that opportunity to be able to look back on my own practice and see what, in fact, I said. Sir?
Well, I was going to say, I use it for teacher observations for that exact reason, because it allows me to go back and look at what I typed and say, does that make any sense? And usually I can go to, you know, I can click on what I typed and turn on what I was listening to or hear it and know, oh yeah, that does make absolute perfect sense. And when I have a conversation with the teacher and when we do the debrief, I can actually say, you know, this was, you know, they can even hear it if they want to. This is what you said at that particular point in time, and this was why that was so great, because this was a super point, and you could see even, you know, you could almost even see the kids' heads perk up as you were making that comment. But if you don't have that ability to listen to it, it's harder to remember what it was that was being said.
Yeah, I found these really useful at parent-teacher conferences. Like, you know, if I've had a conversation with students, or, like, you know, hold on one more moment. If I'm wandering around the room, so I want you to look at this for a moment. If kids are aware that I record my lessons, which my students are aware, then I could be walking around the room, and as you're meeting in a small group, I could be having a conversation with you. Like, you know, I mean, first off, if they're aware, then it's on them. Like, you know, so they're aware that this is happening. I would not do it in secret. I think that's unfair. But that way, like, if they're having a smoky conversation that's about the prom and not about the prompt, that I could be sitting down with mom and dad and say, well, you know, I mean, right now they're struggling because when they're given time to work on their own, this is what they talk about. Again, so could you talk to your child and say that I like prom. Prom is a great time of year. Like, you know, I mean, I love cummerbunds. But, you know, in history class, the conversation was supposed to be about Juan Perón. And so they need to focus. Even better, like, you know, I mean, if you look up at my screen, they give you with this plus button all these other nice things. So I can insert photos in here, or even better, I could take a photo. So if my good friend, Notre Dame grad here, was doing something else on his iPad and I'm walking around, I can snap that and put it right into my notes and then have it available for mom and dad to see as well. Okay? Or, better yet, and more productive, because I don't want to just have this simply be how do we catch kids, I can take pictures of student work and have it annotated over time. I could pick 5 kids in a given day and track them over the course of the year by having these photos. So this is Jim's file. This is Nancy's file. And I'm able to see their progress or not over the course of time. I could look at what groups are doing. I could see their progress. And I could put that all here and be able to demonstrate that over the course of class. For students, and hold on, I know 2 people have questions, so I just want to finish the photo thought and then I will move on. If we flip this around to student pedagogy, I mean, again, I want you to think about this. Dr. Horowitz did have 2 days where he showed slides. Not PowerPoint, slides. Which we had no ability to be able to access outside of class. He's showing us these pictures of the Ashcan School of Art, which was gorgeous. But he wanted us to be able to identify these later on an exam. How in God's name are you able to write? He's just clicking at this rapid clip. So I said, I'm not writing these down. And I flipped open my iPad, went to this particular page, and just kept hitting the button every time he showed something to be able to keep track of it. Now, he didn't know I was doing it because he wasn't paying attention to me in the room, period. It may be off for many of us to experience a student doing that, but if we have really good visuals, okay, if we have things that we want kids to remember and retain, then I personally wouldn't have an issue with kids getting a couple of clips to be able to throw in there to be able to augment their notes. Okay, so for me, that may take some comfort. Because I know that many people would not be comfortable with kids taking pictures in class, but at the same time, if they're doing it productively and if they have to upload their notes to you later, you'll see it. Okay, and sometimes those notes I've found are far richer than anything kids are putting in their notebook. I mean, think of that functional. What would it take to do that 15 years ago? I mean, think about it. I mean, with this technology, this is, for me, phenomenal. I showed my students my pictures from Thailand from 1998 in class yesterday, and I said, these are pictures in a photo album. Like, you know, and this was, like, developed from film. But, I mean, think about it. Back in the day, we used to have, like, 36 shots, and that was it. Like, you know, so, I mean, if a kid were to do this today, if I have the camera in class, is that good enough? Is that the right one? Like, you know, do I want to take it now? Like, you know, do I want to wait for a better one? And then go pay to print it out, and then have to tape it in my notes. Now it could just be done. And that, to me, is a functional advance. In some ways, I'm sort of happy that the Star Trek moment has happened to be able to let me do that. So, your hand was up. I'm so sorry that I had to wait so long.
No, and it's, I'm assuming, pretty easy to, let's say you're using it to log student progress, like for students who are on success plans.
Right.
To then maybe create a shared Google Doc file with their families and with the counselor so that they can also monitor them.
I didn't even plant you. Thank you so much. And I'll go over to Andy in a second. But you can come over here. So I'm in this note that I have right there, and you'll see there's a little box with the arrow. And code, by the way, this a fifth grader told me this at I went to an elementary school. She's like, well, just hit the box with the arrow. What does that mean? It means to share. And actually it does in pretty much almost every app. But you have this sequence of pretty much every program to load this to. So I could take that file, and if my parents had access to those Google Docs, I could say, here's Jimmy's notes from Friday. So for the success plan, they could see every note he had to do, or I could make a requirement of that student to have to submit their notes to their parents or to me using this particular program right here. This also plays nice with Schoology. And so to speak to your rivals, you know, or friends or collaborators, I mean, all St. Mary's students use Notability. They all have it. And they all upload their stuff directly to Schoology right from Notability. So teachers will give them the note sheet for a particular day or the graphing sheet for a particular day. Student does the work on it in here, and they can annotate it. And then when they're done, they upload it straight to Schoology, and nary a piece of paper passes between the two. So, Andy?
It's two things real quickly. Some of you are downloading Nearpod. When it finishes, when it asks you, open the program, and when it asks you, it pops up a window, push don't allow. It's asking if it can notify you. Okay, and it doesn't matter if you push OK, but it just, again, is a safety thing. Every time you push don't allow, it means you get one less reminder from something outside your world.
And if you hate little red circles like I do, then that's the button you always want to hit. Like, no. And they get clever sometimes and switch which side it's on. But I,
And then the second thing, I just want to piggyback on what Sean was saying about this kind of thing. I just did student presentations. And I was in Schoology with my rubric grading in a place for comments for these presentations. I did the score in a matter of minutes while they presented. I wrote my comments, and I was able to copy their presentation and put it to their shared Google Drive. I had a mom call me and say, why did my daughter get 0 out of 5 for preparation? And I responded, because she went a minute over the time limit, and she wasn't prepared. And the mother said, well, I saw her preparing. I said, I didn't have evidence of that. Please look at the video. And she went to her daughter's shared Google Drive folder, watched the video, and said, she prepared, but you don't have evidence. Thank you. And I was able to do all that. That process used to take me a couple of days, and I was able to do it in an afternoon this year. So
for what it's worth.
Sir.
With your notability, I think is what you could send them a piece of paper that has the 5 topics that I think you should organize your notes today, but I don't, and the kid can use them and make his own notes.
Right. They can import that from Schoology into notability.
To make it their notes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or they can take your PowerPoint.
Whatever you'd want to share. One thing I would note is that, again, I tell you to take a breath now. This process, when I first went to St. Mary's, and when I first went to Central, when I first went to Jesuit, faculty was the same way, in the sense that, like, you know, this is something that they had not done in their flow before. Like, you know, when I go to St. Mary's now in particular, like, you know, even people who are hostile, like, openly hostile to this process, to the point that, I mean, I was like, wow, that was a zinger, they all do it. You know, you walk among their classes, and the kids got it, and they got it. Okay, and I know it will take some time to get used to that as part of your flow, but once you have it, I mean, I can tell you from my own classroom experience, it just makes stuff a lot quicker and more efficient. You're not shuffling around with paper. It is simply that they have it, they're able to use it, and if they don't have it, they're able to find it pretty quickly, or their friends are able to get it to them. And then the parent connection for you, I mean, it doesn't affect me as an undergrad instructor, but I mean, to have the parents looped in, here's the information, here's where they can find it. Okay, here's your students' work. See what they're doing. Okay, I mean, the grade's bad. All the stuff is here. Okay, be able to give them that access in a way that we haven't had that access before can be very helpful for those parents who want to be able to help their child and previously were not able to do so effectively. Sir?
I have a question about notes and the value of notes and pictures, and you talked about visuals. So in my class, I will reinforce something, and I'll write it on the whiteboard, and I have my system, you know, this is in red, this has a star by it, it's not in your text, this goes into your notes for French class. I'll put an explanation or something on the board, and the kids will say, can I take a picture of that? And I usually pause for a minute, you know, and I have this conundrum, and I say, sure. You need to ask me before I take a picture.
Right.
They take a picture, and they have it. Because for them, I'm assuming, I hope, that's portable and they've got it, but are they missing out on the mind-brain-motor function connection? That's my, you know, so you talked about pictures for visuals. How about, you know,
for all notes?
Yeah.
Well, remember that this is part of procedures, okay, that I present this to you as part of the idea of pedagogical content knowledge. And also the argument, too, I believe that kids should take notes. There is something to be said about the memory of actually writing your notes down, of typing out your notes, of being able to do that particular process. Where I typically tell people to really employ this, don't go crazy in the spring, but plan for your procedures those first couple of days when you start to tell kids, here's how, what's your last name?
Baker.
What's that?
Baker.
How, this is how Mr. Baker's class runs. Okay, you have those days, right? Any of the others, the procedures for my class, here's how you survive, here's my pet peeves, whatever. I mean, this is simply a process of being able to reinforce with kids, here's how things work in here. Pictures are fine, but when I say so. I need you to take notes differently. I mean, the nice part of this, I actually thought you were going to say, can kids change the colors to match your sequencing, you know, and you can actually teach them to be able to do it now. I mean, instead of having 20 pens, like, you know, they could simply write in those different colors and match your particular sequence, which I actually think would be great for them to learn your process even more clearly, so that way they know it. I think that I personally still want my students taking notes, and you just have to be able to clarify that for them in the very beginning. And also be comfortable next year as they have devices. I would be wary of being too punitive in year zero or in year one because they're figuring things out. You don't know the flow. Like, you know, see what's working, what you don't like. Keep a running log in Notability of what's happening. Be scientists in that regard. Like, you know, wow, I don't like when they do that. I'm not going to punish them because they were just experimenting with this for the first time, but next year that's going to be in my procedures. We can't do that, or we will do this. And remember, too, that they're coming in, the kids that you're having, are really from a different world. Like, you know, the kids who are coming into school now don't remember a world without an iPhone. You know, and for them, this is just the stuff that they use. My daughter turned this on when she was 2, okay, without me. It was on a counter. She walked over, grabbed it, unlocked it, started to play. Okay, now, I don't let her play a lot. I sort of don't believe that little kids should have a lot of screen time. You know, but at the same time, she was able to use it. She got to her app and started playing. You know, and it was sort of scary for me to watch that happen. And our kids have only gotten better at this. And so for them, a lot of what they do is not natural to us. And we have to understand that mindset and be able to treat it, in my mind, not punitively, but in a pedagogically sound way. Here's a tool. Here's how you use it properly. And here are other tools to be able to use. I'm very pro-phone, and that's my particular stance, because I believe this thing that I've been given is a remarkable tool. Why wouldn't I use it? But I have a responsibility to train students how to use it appropriately for the right context and not punish them for having something. Very last clip on this before I have you read. There's a feature here that I love called WebClip. The reason that I emphasize this is National Advance, so a lot of times in class I'll say, hey, if you want to know more about this, then read this. Okay, or check out this book, or check out this guy. And so a kid could type in, like, you know, so if I pick in, like, Richard White, okay, who's an American historian who I enjoy, okay, and I'm able to punch that in here, then if the page were to work, it could work. But if I went to Google, which I'm pretty sure will work, that says Goikel, which I've never heard of as a site. Oh, there we go, here's Google. And I type in Richard White. Okay, then I get this information about him being called up here. I can take this particular piece, and when I'm ready, hit done. And then it adds that little clip to my text. Okay, and so then later on, the kid can click on that and be able to access the information later. And I sometimes find the kid who's multitasking and trying to move fast is able to have that stuff ready for them to be able to augment their notes. So for me, again, the pedagogical value of this is a couple of places. Number one is that for kids who are slow at the uptake when it comes to writing, they're able to do a bit more than what they were able to do traditionally. But for kids who are faster on the uptick, they're able to augment their notes with a heck of a lot of other stuff to be able to make them more full and complete. We find in our studies that when kids are able to use this versus a traditional notebook, and again, I'm not bagging traditional notebooks, you have a lot less misdirection or kids leaving, because if they know all the tools, they can continue to augment what you've been talking to them about and improve it. And if you show them more resources and how to do that effectively, you'd be surprised by how deep down the well they will go, in my experience, more than they ever did when they were simply using paper and pen. Okay? So, go ahead.
So a lot of our kids, well, I teach a freshman study school class. They don't type well. They
yes.
text great.
Mm-hmm.
So they can
thumb it.
This really,
yeah.
really well.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, typing, they don't do.
Can I say something radical?
I mean, I know you can split your keyboard and they can, I don't know, like, what you would recommend for them to do.
Well, hold on here for a second. Scientists, okay, is this in the state of nature? Okay, so I mean, in fact, the original keyboard, did it look like that original keyboard?
No.
Okay, the reason that the QWERTY keyboard was developed was because ABC made us move too fast. Okay, it actually jammed the typewriters. Okay, and so and the only reason I say this is I type like this, I type fast like this, but this was not how Sean was raised. Okay, like, you know, this came later in a keyboarding class with an old IBM computer and a piece of paper over my hands. If a kid can do this, I can feel for their thumbs, but I watched one of my undergrads type an entire term paper just like that. And you know what? I really don't care. They did all their citations correct. Like, you know, they were able to do footnoting, Chicago style, perfectly, just like that. It may seem radical to a lot of people, but ultimately, what do I care about? I don't care about the process of them typing. I care about the product that's in front of me. And if this is how they did it, maybe their thumbs fall off, and we'll find some study 20 years from now that this is bad for thumbs. But I have carpal tunnel right now from this.
Right.
So obviously, this is not necessarily the best thing of all time. If they're doing this, then oh well.
So and is it a process of like teaching the kids how to do different things with their keyboard on their iPad? Also?
I think so. I think offering them opportunities and options. I mean, even touch typing. I mean, a lot of us probably were very thrown off. I mean, some of you have keyboards. You know, Steve Jobs would say that you're all insane. Like, you know, the purpose of this device was not to have any peripherals, no stylus. No, I mean, it's to have the device and the device only. But a lot of us use the keyboard because that's what felt right to us. And felt right is a very subjective thing. It's not like this is how it should be. And so my thought is, if you're teaching freshman skills, I mean, if a kid can motor off 150 words with their thumbs, God bless them. Like, you know, I mean, and if like, you know,
but
they,
I have to know as a teacher how to help them. Here's
able
an option
to
for you. And here's what you can do with your iPad.
And as you investigate that, like, you know, if you want to be able to, and this is an offer to anyone in the room, if you want to investigate opportunities for that freshman class of how to do that, like, you know, it's not necessarily my plan for today, but we can have that conversation of how would we do that. And be able to do that pedagogically in a sound way. All right. Do me a favor. Take that piece of paper out that I gave you, that little booklet. And a little bit quicker now. Okay, I'm going to ask you to look at that third page with lots of pretty colors. Okay, so do me a favor. Take just 5 minutes. You guys were reading fast. But scan this page. Scan the back page.
With our eyes or
our eyes? With your eyes. Thank you, French teacher. All right, dear friends, if I can grab your attention, can you tell me a little bit about these various paths that were developed by Dr. Hughes and Dr. Puntadera? You know, brief take, what did you glean from those multiple graphs, you know, and from that commentary at the very end? So, thoughts, insights, concerns? Go ahead.
We were talking about sort of the contrast, I guess, between the first part where you're using it just to replace, you're using the digital technology to replace what you've always done. So that's kind of where we feel like we are now.
Okay.
And we're hoping that next year, especially when the kids also have devices, that we're able to move more to that transformative.
It sounds nice, right? Transformative.
Yeah.
Redefining education is powerful. Verbiage that they picked there. Okay, so others? Go ahead.
We felt that starting at that replacement, so many people feel like they have to start at the transformation part, but just start with replacement, and then I have found that that just allows a grassroots, like, a student will go, I'm just going to do it this way. Oh, that's great. You didn't know you were being transformative in the way I teach this, but now I, as the professional, can see what you did and apply that on purpose to a different topic later. And that leads me there. And they're teaching me how to be transformative as opposed to me forcing it upon them.
Fantastic. Like, I also like this notion that, I mean, you see this, and again, some people have like a momentary hiccup of like, oh God, I'm not transformative. You most likely are transformative in your teaching. Like, you know, I mean, I would give you that credit. Maybe not, like, you know, doing transformative stuff with technology, but that's okay. Like, you know, I mean, if you're at replacement, none of these has a value attached to it. Like, you know, it's simply, these are just the stages. Like, you know, and if you want to move along, then that's perfectly fine. But, I mean, it's where people could be at. Okay, others? Okay, maybe one more? Thoughts, concerns? Go ahead.
I guess I just love that we're, like, that we're teaching ourselves and kids that we're lifetime learners. And so when we pay attention to when things become transformative and we're giving them the inquiry-based learning. So we're teaching them that how kind of how to go through that process, not necessarily what it's going to be often, but how they can do it responsibly or
Yeah. Okay. There is a part here, and this was actually a side effect that St. Mary's found interesting, was how much the kids could teach them, and how the learning process. And this for me, actually, I will admit, could have been a very difficult thing as a high school teacher, because I sort of went to a high school, went to an all-boy Catholic prep school in New York called Chaminade. My teachers were the font of all knowledge. They were brilliant men and women. I loved them very much, and I wanted to be like them as a teacher. And so the idea of being able to go to a kid and have a kid teach me a piece of technology, like, you're 15, what do you know? And initially that was not something I would have ever taken. But I mean, I found that kids, the very first day I got an iPad, the very first day it came out. Okay, and it was actually, I didn't want it. Okay, I went there saying, I really don't want this device, but I started playing with it, and I really liked it, and I had a grant from Best Buy at the time. So I bought it and brought it in. The first day, this kid, Michael Moore, no relation to the filmmaker, says, that's an iPad. Can I play with it? I said, yeah, no problem, right? So he takes it and starts adding all these apps, right? Just like, I mean, this remarkable moment of, like, just filling it. And I'm like, Michael, what are you doing to my device? My brand new iPad. He's like, no, these are good things. I'm going to show you. And he did. I'm like, yeah, Michael's now an engineer. Okay, I mean, but this was, you know, this moment where I was watching him being able to, and he was doing it out of kindness. He wasn't trying to destroy it. He was trying to give me these things to be able to help me understand the potential of the device. And that was a wonderful moment for me to be able to see. In teaching educational technology, the number one rule is humility. That there is no way I can ever, even though I read, my days are between teaching and reading, teaching and reading. It's a wonderful life. But I mean, I just recognize the breadth of stuff out there in the tech world is something I can never master. And I think there's a humility to it of sometimes kids are going to come in, and they will have an understanding of a device or a concept that I simply don't. And they're going to teach me. And that, to me, has been a wonderful part of this particular learning process. So, yes. Now, I want to talk about these two just for a quick second. I am an advocate of the rat. I don't love the name of the model. I think I wish he had a different word. But I like Joan Hughes's version because of the concept of Occam's razor. Why do in four steps what you could do in three? And so, however, Dr. Hughes's protocol is not the one that's currently making circles around the country. Apple took Dr. Puntadera's model here. And if you were to talk to an Apple rep, they will say that this is their pedagogical model, that they want teachers to know this particular one at the bottom. Okay, so that's why it's still here presented to you, so that you're aware that this, in fact, exists. So, just to be able to give you an example of how this operates, I have two. And I want to talk to you about those in terms of how you maneuver through this, okay, and some examples that could work for you. And that way you can see what they mean by this process. And so, for the first one, if you don't mind, I've talked at a very easy access point, we've talked about it already, but the idea of Stammer for note-taking. Okay, and we'll put this in your particular world here for a second of student note taking. So, if you were just doing substitution, what do you think that would be? Okay, what would substitution be if it were note taking? So, go ahead, tell me what this is.
Typing on or writing in place of a piece of paper.
Right, so instead of a piece of paper, they're in Pages, they're in Word, they're even in Notability without any of the extra functions. Like, they're just simply typing. They've gone from one to the other. It would be true substitution if after they were done typing, you asked them to print it out and give it to you, you know, because you want to have that piece of paper in your hand. Okay? And that's typically what we see a lot of people do at that early level. What would be the next one? Okay, let's go to augmentation. Okay, what would that be?
They can write with spell check.
Okay, they could. They can write with spell check. We could even, like, you know, up it a little bit here. Like, you know, I mean, if you go to Notability, if you think about what we were just talking about, they can add pictures. Okay, they can add web clips. Okay, they can add a recording. Like, I mean, all those things at one point in time you couldn't have added to notes, but now you're able to add a couple of functional things at the same time. The note still resembles a notebook, right? Like yes, you could imagine, like, in an old school day, a kid taking a picture and taping it to the notebook, or being able to put a website URL. I mean, you really haven't changed the note-taking process all that much. Okay, you've just given it a few extra features to be able to use. Modification I want to show you. Who has assigned kids to do a mind map before? Okay, or like a web a mind web. Okay, so this app over here is called MindMeister. Okay, and this one, by the way, is one that I had to teach elementary students, and so she was doing sports for kindergarten. I want you to look at this mind map here for a second. Okay, so if she were doing this on a piece of paper, okay, how would this have looked? Okay, let's think about, first off, I mean, could she have fit it with the right writing on a piece of paper yay size? Maybe. Okay, but it's difficult to be able to pull that off, or it becomes really messy. Or option two, she could take that mind map and have like multiple sheets of paper. Like if she really wanted to cover all of the elements, she'd have to have like this almost expansive multiple screen possibility. And that would be onerous. Okay, here, she can zone in on one thing, be able to highlight it. Notice that she's adding pictures to all of those pieces, and then be able to shrink it to be able to add more along the way. There's a program called Padlet. Okay, and Padlet operates the same as a giant cork board, and you can add video, you can add graphs, you can add pictures. And when you look at a fully formed Padlet, you have to pause for a second and think about this functional improvement. I mean, go back 15 years. Okay, what would it have been like to make a mind map with all of those features on it? I mean, let's take our paper here for a second. So you could have written the mind map and drawn that out. But what would it take to have a video attached to this mind map? Okay, you would have had to what? Have like a little DVD player like over here to have the video on? Like you remember like back in the day, I used to have like the rocket launcher VHS. Like, you remember those? Like, can you imagine what it would take? So that now is available to have the graph. And the graph is great because they can shrink and come up. Then I have to have this graph on here. What if I wanted an audio recording? Okay, do you remember, again, like, I mean, what an advantage. I used to have, like, the little handheld audio recorder, the little tapes. Like, and that, to me, was the greatest thing ever. It was my 11th birthday present. Like, I loved that thing. So I was going to be a journalist. But, I mean, the old tape recorders, like, your tapes. Like, you know, and so just if you imagine this setup here, it's like you have an arsenal. I've often thought of doing that with my students, of going on eBay and buying all of these things and, like, bringing them in and just showing them the amount of stuff that we would have had to do to be able to do what we can now do in a singular program. Okay, I had to do an exam on the history of the 20th century historiography of the Middle East. Okay, and I was trying to figure out how in the heck I was going to be able to make this. It would have been pages. And so a friend said, well, do it in MindMeister. And so I have one, which I'll call up for the history department later on, that just is expansive in all possible directions. Taxonomies, okay, science folks, I mean, kids can create these and go in directions and directions and directions. That's a functional improvement. That's a modification that allows kids to grasp concepts that previously was unavailable to them. Someone asked me about whether or not, you know, this actually impacts learning. If you look at your chart, do me a favor and take a pen. And go over that dotted line that you see in between modification and augmentation. Okay, so, because when Puntadura has done his studies, okay, replacement and augmentation have minor, if any, effects on student learning. The moment that you move, augmentation and substitution. When you get to modification, you begin to see kids improve their abilities on tests. This was certainly the case in math. Math scores spiked. English scores spiked. Okay, kids were able to retain material far better because they were being able to attack it in a way that was more appropriate to their learning style than the previous styles that had been used for them. Now, when you get to replacement, okay, now, this is a mind map, doesn't completely resemble traditional notes, but at the end of the day, this is still something that they would have done in a school setting. Okay, you've played, okay, with Explain Everything, okay, you may have played with iMovie, okay, what Puntadura and Hughes would say is that when you are asking kids to go a completely different direction, take your notes in a different format. Okay, try to augment. What he would say is that in this case, so I'll go to a different slide here. You're going to see, I think, if it kicks over. Okay, this is a video of me showing how to use the app EasyBib. I'm not sure how much you've played with Explain Everything, but kids can add video, audio, websites, pictures, photos, and then have them all on singular slides and move from slide to slide. When kids do this as their note-taking, which doesn't necessarily resemble our note-taking, when they're able to use all of these facets, when they hit transformative stages, when they make a movie of their notes, which I know sounds crazy, but it's so easy to do with these devices, okay, their learning goes off the charts. Okay, their scores double or triple because they're able to do types of learning that previously they weren't able to do before and the technology is made accessible to them. Even think about film. I was told by the president of Portland Community Media that I no longer needed to buy video cameras. That was a waste of time and a waste of money. Because if I have my iPad, then I have the camera, I have the editing software, I have publication software, I have everything I need in one place. At what stage in our development would students have that in their hands? I remember the hours I spent having kids upload documentaries to my desktop Mac in my classroom, and then the hours it took to go over the wired network to get it to YouTube. Now I can do a 5-minute video to YouTube in about 10 seconds. That is phenomenal. And then the other functional piece that's transformative, the kids can make their notes, and they can share their notes across the globe. They can send their notes by Twitter to the people who wrote the book and get responses. Lori Hall Sanderson, if you have read Speak, okay, Lori Hall Sanderson is apparently a friend of mine via Twitter. I gave her a book suggestion, and now she tweets me back and forth in a way, and so I'm able to send stuff to her about adolescent literacy, and she comments right back. I don't know if it ever would have existed in a world prior to this particular moment. To me, that kind of connection, like seeing her do talks with students, I'll get on, she'll be talking to 8th grade kids by Twitter, and they're sharing their ideas with her from their classes, that's transformative. And it's available today. Let me try one more, though, really quick. Okay, and so a lot of you, when you do presentations, probably use PowerPoint or Google Slides. Okay, and there's nothing wrong with this. You know, in some ways, though, we've hit a phase, I think, where PowerPoint has had its time. And for me, if you're doing PowerPoint, essentially, you've done presentations. Okay, they're good. And in some ways, they're not necessarily a super functional improvement over an overhead. But they still are. I'll grant that. But there are opportunities through programs here that can make life a lot better. Now, if you have spent a lot of time making PowerPoints, let me a little proviso here. At no point in this presentation, anywhere later, I will say to throw those away. Okay, I have PowerPoints from 1998 that I still have used in this format. So I just want to make that out there so that I don't get like things thrown at me, like, you know, or so just be aware. But there's a couple of things to take note of. One is called Haiku Deck. And Haiku Deck, so you know, is what I think would be a augmentation of PowerPoint. And here's why. I am a advocate. In fact, actually, notice today I'm not using a PowerPoint in this presentation. I gave you a piece of paper to start, like, you know, and that actually is because I would call myself a disciple of a man named Edward Tufte, T-U-F-T-E, who believes in a different way of visual representation. And this particular program here was made with his rules in mind. Because the two things that it does, number one is it limits your text. Okay, many of us, me included, have PowerPoint slides that are way too full, okay, for the people that we're showing them to. PowerPoint was supposed to be about visuals. This restricts you to about 10 words. For student presentations, this is great. Because I'm not sure if you've ever had this experience where a kid gets up to the presentation, you're in the room grading, but you're not really in the room to them because they're like this, O-R-A-F-C-S, good times. And the entire presentation is there. And they'll read the whole slide. Okay, but here, they're limited. But then even better, the program is nice because if we are to edit this particular program, and I'll go to the main menu here and edit, it's made to be able to, isn't that wonderful, it's a Friday, nice glass of wine. It's made to emphasize the visual. Okay, it has a number of built-in sequences where you can get the images right here, and it will give you images that are Creative Commons free. So that way, there is no watermark, there's no problem. Like, you know, it's simply something that kids could load directly into what's there. They also, for those of you who like graphs, which I like, gives you a chance to make all types of charts and manipulate them just by hand. And then the other part that's functionally better is that you can share your presentation by several different means when you're done. And then also when you hit play, what I usually find great about this is that it won't show up on here because I haven't written notes, but a kid actually will get a different screen than what you see because it's made to help them with the presentation. So they put their notes here, you see one thing, they see another. Okay, and so for me, it's a slight advance over PowerPoint. Now, it's still linear, still looks and sounds like a PowerPoint, so let me keep moving along the way here. So if you loaded Nearpod, I'd like to show this one to you. So open that up. Okay, you are not a teacher on this, just so you know. Right now, you are my students. Hello, 10th grade, how are you? Hey, boys, you need a shower. Sorry. Yeah. Force of habit. Now, you're not going to see what I see. Skip the tour. I'm going to go into my library of presentations. So again, I still do presentations. I have one called Nearpod and Social Studies that I'm going to share with you. And I'm going to ask you, okay, where it says, like, join a session, there's like an orange box. Okay, do me a favor. This gives me my live session number. It'll be a second. We'll wait for it to load. You're going to punch in this code momentarily. And then we're going to have it load to your devices. Okay, so please, if you could, punch in that code, LHENX. And if you don't have an iPad, you can do this on your phone. You can do it on a laptop. You can do it on an Android tablet. You can do it on a Chromebook. Okay, so there is no reason that a kid in your classroom, if they forgot something, wouldn't have something that they could access this on. So once you are logging in, it'll probably start saying it's going to load. Okay, and we'll get that for a moment. Now, here's a trick that we'll be aware of right now. The very first time you ever use this program, kids have to get used to it, and so a lot of teachers freak out because it takes a moment to load or it slows down their flow. And so the very first time I always use it with anybody, I say, hey, I'm going to have some jokes, I'll tell stories, I'll do something else, upload it, same way I had you all upload it today. You should get a picture of this right here. And so eventually we'll all be at that particular point. The second time you do this, those problems go away. Okay, 9 times out of 10. Okay, and so kids know what they're doing at that particular point. Okay, but here's how I use this. I'm going to try something in a moment, but I'm going to unplug this because the way that Nearpod works is that you get rid of the image on the screen because they have it right in front of them. Okay, and so they're not looking there, they're looking here. Okay, and so I put that connection between me to this, this to that, that to you, and they're not looking up here in the back. Okay, now that's a functional difference because instead of kids hiding, like I've talked to a couple of you today, but some of you haven't spoken to me. And some of you also have given me what I call the good look, which is that you look like you're paying attention, but I'm not really sure. And sometimes it may change. I walk close to you and suddenly I invade your dream of white. But in classes, a lot of the times kids can disappear and we really can't check in on them. And that's why I like this particular program. Okay, so what's going to happen on your screen is you see I just controlled it and you're going to punch in your name. And give me your real name, not some name in a different language, or not your code name, or whatever you have. So you don't need to give me a number, okay? Unless you want to be 007, this is your shot. Okay, and then when you're ready, please hit submit. It'll put on a whole page for you here. Now, I'm going to go back and just show you what I see. There's a couple of great things about this particular program if you've never played with it before. So we'll give it a moment to kick back in. So everyone is starting to appear on my list, so I know who's here. Look at the top of the screen in green. I have a list of students. Now, if someone were to leave my class, that would blink red. And so I would know someone had disappeared. Okay. There's also something wonderful, which is that if a student tries to go to a different program on their device and is gone for more than 30 seconds, they are booted out of my presentation, and they can't get back in. Okay, the other part that I like is that I don't post that code anywhere in the room. I tell them it, they type it in, they get in. Okay, and then if they need it, since kids don't usually write this stuff down because they haven't learned, if they need it, they have to ask me.
Is it different for each?
It's different for every class, every session. And there's a beauty to that that I sort of like. Now, that said, Once that's done, you'll see here that I have controls to maneuver this out to my students. So, for example, what I like about this is I also can have it be interactive. So you have a quiz question in front of you right there. Okay, so go ahead and try to answer that question, please. Okay, that's the picture in the very beginning that you saw. Just give me your opinion here. Now look at my screen as people are answering. Okay, I get to see who's answering, what they answered, what the breakdown is in the room. So if it was, what was your feeling about the homework? I could know right away. If it was a translation, what does this mean? I could see who got it and who didn't. If it was a concept in science, like, you know what I mean? So what's this wound? Like, you know, that's actually more of a health question. I could have that show up as well. And so I can check their understanding. Now, think about this in terms of real-time analytics. We have plenty of moments in our classes where we say to kids, do you get that? And they go, mm-hmm. And we know that they're lying, but now I can check. So if I looked at this and I saw that there was that, like, you know, 48% didn't get it, then I could stop right there and say, we need to review this right now before I go any place further. Because apparently, pedagogically, I didn't explain this well enough, or it's the wrong time of day, or whatever. But before I go five steps ahead and kids really get lost, I'm going to stop and cover this right now. But it's even better than that, because I can then also control where else they go. So you're going to be loaded to a website. It'll be a browser. It may take, this is the longest one whenever I do big presentations like this. But instead of having them go to the website on their own, I send them to a browser that I control. Okay, so that way they can't necessarily go and multitask in Facebook. Okay, they'll be at this particular site, which will be a fully functional website. Some of you are seeing it populate. It's on the Tenement Museum. And they're able to manipulate this site, but notice there is no back button. Okay, like, you know, I mean, there's a little one to go on this particular page, but they can't leave this particular browser to go someplace else, and the browser functions normally for them to be able to stay at that place to do their research or do their particular work. Now, I will say that as much as I'm interested in your love of the Tenement Museum, we're not going to stay there for very long. Okay, I'm going to move to this one, which I also like. I can also have kids do written evaluations. Look at the bottom left of your screen. There's a pen there. Okay, so I like you, and I put evaluate Reese's commentary. Do me a favor and circle the line that you think reads the best. It's just a general kind. We could actually evaluate Jacob Reese here, but we won't do that for now. Just do me a favor and underline something, highlight something. If one of you wants to put a smiley face, I'll be okay with that today. Okay, math teachers, as you're doing this, though, think about what if you threw the problem up there on the screen. Okay, science teachers, what if you put a diagram up on the screen? Okay, yeah, if you touch the pen at the bottom, you should be able to write on this. Now, look at my screen. Okay, I'm seeing who's submitting. I'm seeing what they were submitting, okay, and so I can tell who's taking their time or who didn't do it, okay, and so everybody, no matter where you are, hit thank you, they'll start to appear, so all of you are getting this information to me, okay, and then if a student did something really good, I can look at it closer, and then even better, I can say, I can say to class, now look at your screen, okay, so what do you see now? You see another student's work. Now, where's their name? Now, this wouldn't be here. Like, you know, so there's no name. And so I could say, hey, like, you know, this person did it well. I always tell students the first time I do it, it's like, I will never out you. I will never say that this is your work. If you say it, it's on you. Okay, that way, what I mean by that is, okay, so here's a good one. Well done, whoever you are. But if a student had one, and just for argument's sake, Andy, like, you know, we're fine. Okay, but if a student did something incorrect or was an error that typically happens among students, I could point that out and everyone screams, and then no one will be the wiser as to who that was unless the kid says, hey, that's me! I tried so hard. Again, but that way they're able to have that. Math teachers of all people in the room, you know, I keep referencing you guys for this one, they find this part great because they can say, here's a common mistake in this particular equation. Look at how many of you did this. Okay, let me scan through. How do we fix that? How do we go back and do it? History teachers, Okay, again, I love political cartoons. Okay, I can tell, I throw them up on this. Okay, and by the way, you can take your PowerPoint, compress it, and throw it right in here. Okay, so you don't need to recreate new slides. You can simply put it into Nearpod, and then it will make it into a Nearpod presentation. So that way, if you have a bunch of PowerPoints you've used for a very long time, you don't have to get rid of them. But now you could take that slide and augment it and add to it. Go ahead.
Does it save the student submission so I could go back and look at it later?
Yes. In fact, for every session you do, it keeps track of all of the information. Okay, and so you can go back and check how period 2 did versus period 3, period 3 versus period 5 on your first year, second year, third year. So for me, what's great is that I've been tracking kids' tech fluency. And so I now have these Nearpods for 4 years. And so I can look at what people said about iPhones back in 2011, all the way up to the present, and see how they've changed over the course of time. I know that we're at over...
Oh, no, we're...
Okay.
Oh, we are actually. We have a short lunch time. So. People may want to start using this right away. What are the limits of the free model?
Okay, very few. This is my recommendation to the departments. Instead of having individual accounts, it costs $10 a month. And what I typically tell people... Hold on. Wait. St. Mary's did this, and they all found this to be a very happy medium. They created fake names for their department. So there was, like, Juan Perón is the Spanish department's one. Like, you know, and then they have a password they all share. And so $120 for a year for a department is really, in most cases, not that expensive for this particular piece. However, if that doesn't work for you, and the only reason I often say that one, you can get by with the free version just fine. Okay, if you want to advance to the next one, like, yeah, then it isn't that expensive. But if you email Guido, and Guido Kowalski is the creator of Nearpod, and say you'd like to try this out for a year, he'll actually give you 2 years for free to be able to try it. He's actually one of the most responsive people on the web in terms of making improvements. The one thing I've been asking him for is to build a note-taking function into the program. But he's not there yet, you know, but he keeps adding new stuff to it. And just to show you my list, you can have a 10-question quiz, you can do additional polls, you can put videos, you can put PDF readers. There's a whole series of things you can throw in here to be able to move the dial with presentations. Go ahead.
So just a quick question, since we aren't one-to-one yet, so the students don't have the iPads, would you still think that this would be a good thing for us to try out this year, like showing presentations just... again, on the main screen, just to get used to it before they have them?
Here's what I would do. And again, I don't know your phone policy, and I'm not going to go there, because I actually, when I do this with class, I never have a problem with someone picking up, because if they forget their iPad, they pull out their phone or they use a laptop. You can try it that way, if you wanted to just be expansive. My recommendation is look over your PowerPoints, if you have them. And I would actually better spend the time in the spring just taking one or two and see if you can convert it, and then try it next year. And again, I think this is, I mean, for me, I really want to urge you, and I watched two schools that are not Catholic schools rush their implementation, and in both cases, it was an abject disaster. Okay, the best thing you can do is take your time. I mean, it's exciting for a lot of people to try this and think it would be a great pedagogical improvement, but I see people who, like, you know, run into the trenches, and I think that taking the time to prep it, even trying it with your peers in your classroom after school just to run through it once is useful before you get to the point of implementation just yet. If I may, like, I mean, this is a great program. It's free. The free version is fantastic. I like the paid version, but at the same time, you do not need the paid version. Okay, other schools opt for it because they usually like the program. And so the last thing I wanted to show you, though, is that this is still a linear presentation. The very last app for me is one called Final Argument.
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Can the students have access to the presentation after class?
This is even better, yes.
And look at their notes?
You have something called the homework function. And so when the presentation finishes, and I didn't shut you all off from this, if a student was absent, you can send them the presentation. And they actually would go through it, and it would track their results wherever they were. I have students on our soccer team, and sometimes they'll be sitting in Seattle or Idaho, and they're doing the presentation as we're doing it, or they're going through it in real time and collects the results from them as well. So, and then there's also a point where you have the chance to, it says tweet is the first option, but you can get the URL link and put it on your website, and then kids can maneuver through it another time.
If they wanted to review or something.
They could, yes. The last one I want to show you here says intermission right now. But this is final argument. And the reason I like final argument very much is that it operates a little bit differently than all the other ones. As you'll see here, instead of making a linear presentation, I mean, there are slides, but it operates like a mind web. And so the reason that I find this to be useful, okay, so if I click on here, here's your SAMR model. If a student said, hey, can you go back a few slides? Now, in your PowerPoint experience, if you're on slide 8, and a kid asks you to go back to slide 3, tell me that process. You have to go back, or you have to leave the presentation and go back. Okay, this is touch-based. So if a kid asked me that question, I could simply tap on it and maneuver to that really, really quickly. Okay, what's better, though, is that it comes with a bunch of built-in tools. So I can annotate these as it goes, which I can't do in the other ones. I can use a laser pointer that's here. I can add arrows and material to it as it presents. But also, more importantly, sorry, you're not seeing the mirror piece, I can pull from anywhere into this presentation. So if I hit the Sources button, it defaults to my photos. In this case, I can simply pick a photo and drop it in, as opposed to having to do any major upload process. But then if you look here, it's linked up to my Dropbox, my Evernote, my Google Drive. I can put in a PowerPoint fully. It will drop it in completely. I can pull in a PDF. So in this case, I'll grab this one here, and it will load. You'll see it drop. I'd pick it up, drop it right here, and it puts the whole article in. And then I can click on that article, call it up, and then be able to annotate and comment on it. It will take video, and will load a video rapidly. And what students and teachers have used this for, actually teachers have, is that you could throw every document, every piece of material for your lesson onto one of these and have it in one web the entire time. So every article you'd use, every video you'd use, every piece of material for that class can be right here, and you're able to fuse it to other things that are like it or be able to detach it from place to place. So in this case, I can come here, I can cut this off, I can take pieces or I can take segments and move it around. Thank you. I can cut it off and move different pieces away from the main part, or if it made more sense over here, I can then link it together and have it there. And so sometimes I'd say, hey, these ideas make more sense together than what I originally thought. And with a PowerPoint, that's difficult to maneuver around. But also, this follows my brain better than the linear path of PowerPoint, in my experience. Like, you know, that. And also, in terms of presentations, what kids typically ask me never follows that linear path. They're bouncing around. And this gives me the opportunity to be able to respond to them. And then, even better, unlike Nearpod, I can record this presentation. It will record my voice, every action I do, and when I'm done, I can punt it right to my Google Drive for the kids who are absent, or the kids who weren't in class, or the parents who want to hear it. And so it'd be right there for me to be able to use at the very end. Okay. Functionally, these last two I've shown you operate in that modification / redefinition phase. It's still a presentation, so I'm not sure if we really hit redefinition or transformative just yet. But I mean, the ability of people to create in these types of programs, in my mind, pushes the dial in a way that we've needed when it comes to teacher and student presentations. So, that said, my hope this morning, okay, and we have lunch, so I'm going to cut it off now, is that you've been able to see some of the places where there's possibilities. It's important for me to emphasize that I never come to a school with this desire to impose on you that technology is the end-all, be-all. I still dress up for my classes. I still use primary sources. We still have days that have no technology whatsoever. Okay, and that's important for me to say. However, okay, when I first started teaching at Jesuit on day 2, I said to my students, we will not use any technology in this class. Okay, and then I found out that technology could reach them and connect with them in a way that I couldn't do every single day. And so over the course of time, I believe I developed my TPAC, my technological pedagogical content knowledge, to be able to help my students to achieve in classes. And I hope that you don't feel threatened and are able to and willing to do the same. Thank you.